I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Clash. So, on Monday, we went to space with Gerard Butler in Geostorm. And today, space is coming to him in the form of an extinction-level comet. Thankfully, Butler and his family get special wristbands like you would at a festival so they can survive in the VIP area, but only if his wife stops losing stuff and telling everyone how ill the kid is. From 2021, it's Greenland.
We now are getting word that the fragment has hit Central Florida.
Oh, my God.
Wait, are some more pieces gonna hit?
Come on, let's go.
But the sky's on fire.
2 days. They got it all wrong. There's a ton of fragments. Planet killers.
Space agencies are predicting an extinction-level event.
We're gonna be together. All right, get up.
We're just trying to get to safety.
They've been tracking the military flights to bunkers in Greenland.
It's their only chance.
Move back!
Perimeter breach. Perimeter breach. Runway 33.
We'll have a winner at the end of this show, but which film will it be? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Podders. If you are hearing this broadcast, seek shelter immediately. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
If you haven't subscribed to us, please do on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you can, do leave us a rating and review. It does genuinely mean a whole load to us. An example review is going to be given by my good friend Christopher right now.
This comes from Pognose, who says, as a movie fan, this podcast offers a refreshing insight to some of my favourite films, whilst educating me on ones I wouldn't have otherwise watched. It's well-researched, often with plenty of inside knowledge the hosts have garnered over the years of working in the film industry. And as a gravy fan, it's nice to see the North being represented strongly too.
I'm just doing my bit. I just do what I can.
So I like that because there was a bit of substance in that review and it ended with a gag. Perfect. Perfect review. 5 stars.
Just to be clear, we are reviewing reviews now on the show.
Why not?
Okay, just so I know what's going on. This is part two of Geostorm versus Greenland. These were Victoria's choices. Victoria, they were my choices, actually. What am I saying? I'm trying to pass off Geostorm onto you. These were my choices because I'm a sick individual. Now, Chris, Geostorm through Geostorm on Monday, which means today Victoria is going to take us on a journey to Greenland. Victoria, take us on a journey.
John Garrity's marriage is falling apart. Not to worry, there's loads of fireballs about to plunge from the sky, killing everyone with an extinction-level event. So John and his family are off to find safety and each other, literally and metaphorically, as they are selected for rescue, then denied, then try to bust into the top secret shelter anyway. On their journey, they meet people who are either the worst of humanity and will kidnap your child or stave your head in with a hammer, or are absolutely amazing and give you life-saving information just because they're nice and endanger their own survival so you can haul your big self on the last plane to Greenland at the 89th minute. The military are also either murderously bureaucratic about long-term medical conditions, coldly sentencing a young boy to death for having diabetes, or saintly rescuers allowing dozens of illegal refugees into a top-secret shelter just because they managed to arrive more or less on time. Swerving the ending we all thought was coming, Greenland ends on a happy note, which quite frankly, although the duller option, was something this viewer needed after 2 hours of stress-induced reflux and crying my eyes out. Nathan! Oh my God, this film.
Did you cry? Did you really cry? I saw a WhatsApp from you. You seemed anxious in the WhatsApp.
Yeah, I mean, to contextualise it, the Friday night before I watched this, I try not to drink in the week, but on the Friday night, I drank a full bottle of Graham Norton's Prosecco, which I found in, I can't believe I'm going to say this.
Well, you left it at your house?
No, he makes Prosecco and is currently clogging up the reduced section of my local Sainsbury's.
I love a Prosecco. I've not seen, they don't stock that in Highgate anywhere. I'm telling you right now, I've never seen Graham Norton's Prosecco anywhere.
Imagine my surprise passing the reduced aisle, having a ferret around as you do. It's like fucking bingo. There's some booze in there. And it's Graham Norton's Prosecco. So I'll have me some of that. And then drank a full bottle of it on Friday and then fell into the kitchen cupboard because I haven't been drinking all week. And I was like, I'm pissed. Tell you what I'll do. I'll have 2 Manhattans. Great idea. So on Saturday, I was so anxious and frazzled. And when I watched this, I wasn't just, you know, when you cry and it's more like a sort of your eyes are leaking and you're like, oh, I'm just crying. But you know, when you are like, oh, you're sobbing, like
streaming down your cheeks, red raw.
Yeah, but it's more like the racking sort of you can't even get your breath. I couldn't even breathe. It was so upsetting.
Oh my God. I bet that moment that you passed the reduced section and said, and I quote, bingo, I'll have me some of that, seemed like a long time ago. Do you become more northern when you pass a reduced section?
I think, yeah. I mean, even just being within its vicinity is a marker of something. Not everyone's bingo in the reduced.
I'll have me some of that. That fancy Graham Norton from telly. He's got a Prosecco.
I don't know what he's putting in it because the hangover was brutal, but anyway.
Is his face on it?
No, it's not, which tells you a lot, doesn't it? I don't understand it, but it's very much like, it's very his brand. He's like, hey girls, are you having a night in? Do you want some bubbles?
Can I ask, did it actually say Graham Norton anywhere on the bottle, or did someone in the shop go, this is our champagne, it's Graham Norton's champagne?
Yeah, I'll send you a picture of it. It's a very clever logo, actually, with the G and the N. Anyway, so I think it's clear I hadn't seen this film before, but what about you too, Alex?
Well, it's only come out like about 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, I'd seen it once before because I watched it and I got very, very anxious. And then I thought, well, it's just Deep Impact, really, but it's better. And knowing, as I said on Monday, that you two have some strange love affair with Deep Impact, thinking it's better than Armageddon, as evidence on this very podcast, I thought, well, why don't we change that and find a comic movie that we can all agree is better than Deep Impact? So I watched it again for the pod, and I got very anxious. Somehow I got more anxious the second time, possibly because I had less wine in me the second time. Because unlike you, the wine dulls my emotions. So when I watched it on wine, when I watched it on wine, it didn't touch the sides really. It was like, I was like, boring kid, get out of the car, die. But this time I was like, I thought I was a monster I thought the version of me that watched it on wine was a monster.
It turns out you're great. That's good.
I realised at the same time, I realised that was human and I had a heart and the ability to feel.
For you, thank God.
I know
Chris,
you've been
what
waiting.
About you? Yeah, sorry, I know.
I wasn't planning to watch it, but then I kept seeing people on social media saying, this Gerard Butler disaster movie that isn't Geostorm is actually quite good. It's not bad. You should check it out. And so I did. And I was about half an hour in when my missus came home and I was feeling really sick with anxiety and stress. And so I said, oh, good, I'm going to switch it off now. And she got quite interested in it. And she said, no, carry on. Let's watch a bit more. And so we watched it together. And yeah, I mean, I was all over the place. This film really, really got to me. So I at the end, I was pleased I would never have to watch that stressful film again. And then Alex spoiled the whole thing by suggesting it for this podcast. And now I've watched it twice in a month.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I think the fact that everyone's sort of going, hey, this movie's actually pretty good. This is a good movie. Hey, let's tell your friends about it. This is a good movie. Greenland's a good movie. It just shows how much in lockdown our standards have slipped. We have lowered the bar for what good entertainment is since this whole situation. Because a good movie, it is not.
This is the thing. If I'd have watched these two the other way around and Geostorm had watched that first, I would be like, Greenland, where is your Oscar? Like, it would have been so, by comparison. I think the Mark Kermode review did set a lot of expectations for me, but pitched it so perfectly because you go into it expecting it to be better than it should be, but not expecting it to be Oscar worthy. So you just have a really good time, I think. I mean, not a good time. You know what I mean? It's obviously horrendous. My stomach hurt. Actually hurt. I don't even think I've got ulcers, but I need some Gaviscon. Awful.
Yeah. Did you say you had acid reflux earlier when you were watching it? Jesus.
I mean, that's
a physiological reaction to a bad film. It's new to me. I sort of get angry, but I've never sort of had heartburn.
It's either that or it was the Graham Norton Prosecco repeating on me a bit, but we won't know. We just don't know.
But then you have a physiological reaction to a lot of things. Don't you go into entirely red around the neck if you get quite stressed or angry, one of the two, like a kind of red Hulk.
Yeah, I do like to the top of my foot, like roots of my hair down to like my waist, just a raspberry. it's a tell. I don't like it. It's annoying. I've got better with it in terms of like
I can't wait for it. No, I just think if there was ever a great advert for any live shows we do in the future, there, that's it right there. It's like, we'll do the podcast and then we'll make you go red.
Yeah, it's true. I don't like it for the, because I've got better in myself with it over the years of like, okay, I am this colour, so deal with it, other people. But it gives away my state of feeling, and that's the thing I don't like about it. So if I'm pretending not to be mad, so obviously I'm mad. Or if I'm embarrassed, I'm so embarrassed. And I'm trying to be like a grown-up and be like, oh, that's a great point. And that's absolutely not affected me in one bit whatsoever.
On a completely different level, and this is nothing to do with what you just told me, I would really like it if we could play poker together for real money at some point in the future. just throwing that out there, completely unrelated to what you've just said.
Deal. Okay. Now then, let's
talk
about...
That's how it starts. That's poker. Yep, you got the basics there. Deal.
I think I might win. Brilliant. Let's talk about the background to Greenland. So it has been knocking around since 2018, and it was written by Chris Sparling of Buried. Have you seen Buried?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it.
Ryan Reynolds in a coffin for the whole movie. Very good.
Yeah, which I love the concept. But I went into that thinking, oh, maybe it doesn't live up to it, but it is very good. I really liked it. Anyway, Chris Sparling, you'll be interested to know, Alex, says he wrote a different movie to Deep Impact or Armageddon in that it operates more on a personal level than those two movies do. Now then, when you, Alex, told me that it had as a plot point, the thing that Nathan, the young son, is living with type 1 diabetes, I felt the same as I think you felt. I was just like, oh, okay. Like, it's good to see, but it's like, is that just going to be a sort of a bit of a hammy device where it's like, oh, we have to get this thing and we can't go on without it? So I wanted to do a bit more investigation into that. And it turns out, did you know that Chris Sparling's wife also lives with type 1 diabetes, and she's the editor of an organization called Children with Diabetes? And so I watched her interview him via Zoom in different rooms of what I think is their own house about that process, because he's bringing her lived experience to the character. Isn't that interesting? Did you know that?
Yeah, do you know what? And that is interesting. And it makes me feel bad. I think I was unnecessarily harsh when I said a good film this is not, because it isn't a bad film. And that's what I made it sound like. And hearing that, and yeah, I think that I just feel that there are so many tropes in this movie that I've seen before that, you know, without knowing that story, the kid needing medication, just felt like, come on, really? Because there's so many of them. It's just another one in the mix that you go and seen it before.
Yeah, but it's really interesting. In this interview, the writer seems really genuine. And he said that he didn't think, from his experience and his wife's experience, that a lot of people understand that children can have type 1 diabetes. The way he sees it is that when people hear diabetes, they think it's type 2, that it's potentially reversible, and it's something that affects, and it doesn't require medication, and it affects mostly adults. And so he wanted to tell he just wanted to share that information. Which I thought was fascinating, because to me, a type 1 diabetes feels quite familiar. I don't know why it's so different.
Do you know what? I absolutely agree with that, because I did a little reading around it as well, because I was like, well, what is the cause? And the fact that people don't really fully yet know what causes type 1 diabetes, like they can't say it is definitely this. There are so many different factors. It's kind of astonishing. Like, part of it is genetics, possibly, and then there is an environmental factor, but they haven't sort of gone, it is XYZ that definitely causes it, which, you know, seems kind of crazy for an illness that everyone knows about, or at least sort of like thinks they know about.
It also means you've got the cliche with the needing the insulin, the losing the insulin, which we've seen before in other disaster movies. But also you've got the scene where if the government could only take a handful of people to this place, they're not going to take anyone with an ailment, which is such a shocking moment, which I haven't seen before in a film like this. Your child is not healthy enough to come, therefore you're not coming.
Let's talk about Neil Blomkamp. So he was set to direct it, and he was going to direct Chris Evans in the lead. In February 2019, he leaves and Chris Evans drops out shortly after. So I did what for me is quite a lot of digging. Like, I went onto like the fourth page of Google to find out why, and I couldn't. And all I could find was a quote from Neil Blomkamp in an interview where someone said, why did you leave? And he just said, the problem is, unfortunately, there's some political stuff happening with it that I have to not be able to answer that question. Which, if you look at the sentence structure, sort of says a lot. And so he's like, I can't tell you why. I want to, but I can't. So I was going to ask you, Chris, if you knew.
No.
Oh, really? Okay, that makes me feel good, because I thought I'm going to get shown up for like being lazy, but maybe it's just unknowable.
No, your film this week, so go for it.
Rude. He giveth and he taketh away. Wow. That's basically saying, if it had been my movie, I'd have been on the dark web by now, and I would know the answer to that question.
I would have texted Neil Blomkamp and he might not have responded.
I'd have hacked his voicemail, and I could tell you exactly what had gone on.
So then we get Rick Roman Waugh attached, director of Angel Has Fallen, starring Gerard Butler, and therefore Gerard Butler is now attached. Other casting stuff, Kate Mara was mentioned for John's wife, Alison, but then it goes to Marina Baccarin. I weirdly have this strange thing about her that every time she's in something, I just think she is a touch of class. Like, I like her a lot. Mm. I can't put my finger on why, but I was really glad that she was. I like Kate Mara as well, but I was really glad she was in it. I think it's something about she look without being offensive, she looks like a TV actress, but super high quality TV actress. So she just straddles nicely sort of like quality telly and theatrical release stuff for me. Anyway.
I don't know what that means, but...
Are you taking a leaf out of Chris's backhanded compliments book? Because I think...
Oh, yeah, no, I don't mean to.
She's sort of like a TV actress done well. She's sort of
I think I still mean that. No. Anyway, so it was intended for theatrical release. It was going to be released in June because it was all written and shot before the COVID pandemic, even though it was shut down for a while in post. But everything gets pushed and pushed and pushed. And so eventually it goes to Amazon, which I did want to talk about a little bit because we've talked before about how we as people, we don't want cinema to sort of morph into these really polar opposites, which is like tiny indie stuff versus massive four quadrant tentpole movies and nothing in the middle. And with the talent attached to this production, it feels like an actual sort of mid-range proper popcorn film that would make its money back, like job done, everyone's happy. And if it had had a theatrical release, it might have rebalanced things in the cinema as it was a little bit, but it didn't. And so being on the telly, I think, has helped the good reviews because it feel a bit beyond expectations from something that are we still, I mean, maybe this is just me, but are we still in a mindset where when a film goes in quote much straight to TV because of COVID, we think, oh, it's a TV movie rather than having the sort of the quality that you'd get from a theatrical release. What do you think?
I think we're so starved of movies at the moment that I think the fact that this is on TV is great for it as a film. I think if this had got a cinema release, if the cinemas were open, this had got a cinema release, it would have just disappeared. It might have made its money back, but it would not have made the impact that it has done with people looking for something to watch at home right now, something that has a cinematic quality. But I just think some of the, it's difficult without ever seeing it on the big screen, but I do think some elements of it in terms of the scale would not hold up as well on the big screen in terms of the effects and everything.
And yet, ironically, it cost about a quarter of Geostorm, but the effects look better than the Geostorm effects.
Yeah, that's kind of true. I mean, can we save the Geostorm bashing until the end when we do the verdict? Because, you know, as I did a hook for this episode at the end of the last episode, and I said there's some big Geostorm revelations coming, but not yet.
All right, fine. Let's talk about the film. Oh, okay, so we meet John Garrity.
Oh!
What?
I just, the producer of this film, Basil Iwanick, he's chosen to put on the poster for this movie, and indeed the little thumbnail online says, from the producer of the John Wick franchise, The Town, and Clash of the Titans, the 2010 Clash of the Titans. I just find that very strange. Like, he has also produced Sicario. And
you've used that, thing? I think.
Oh, yeah. Wind River as well. He's produced Sicario and Wind River. Why is this guy? I just think it's amazing that this producer, they've gone, so we're going to put John Wick and The Town and either Sicario or Wind River. And he's gone, no, put Clash of the Titans on there. People are like, uh-huh. He just fucking loves Clash of the Titans. He
Some
loves his own
do.
Movie so much. No one does. He must know that by now. No one loves that movie. But anyway, carry on.
Anyway, John Garrity, structural engineer, family man, because he's got a photo of his family on his phone. That's how you know.
I just wrote down, I reckon Geostorm would have taken 7 pages of dialogue to establish what this movie establishes in one image.
Yep. Now, the comet, so there's a comet on its way, but this is why this film is not Deep Impact or Armageddon, because the comet is in the background. It's coming closer, but there's nothing to worry about. You know, it's on the telly. It's quite a light sort of, even like an entertainment piece, like, look at this comet. And I really like that John Garrity is not the expert, because, and I look, you know, I love Deep Impact and I have come to love Armageddon over the intervening period.
Too late for the show, though.
Hmm. Too late for our friendship. But I love that John's not the expert. So Gerard Butler doesn't see the TV news report about the comet and is like, I can see the problem with your projections. I'm the only one who knows the truth. He sees it and he's like, oh, okay. Because he's got something else going on in his family. So he's estranged sort of from Alison, his wife. and he sees Nathan, his son, occasionally. He's staying over at the moment, but maybe she wants him back because, cut to, she's only sleeping on one side of the bed. Mental. If you've kicked your husband out, take all the bed. It would be the first thing I did, but that's me.
And the duvet. You'd wrap yourself up like a little duvet sausage roll, wouldn't you? You'd love that. But isn't that the interesting thing, though? Because she's lying in bed and she's sort of clearly waiting for him, but not waiting for him. But the door is closed and he sees the door closed and he's like, oh, guest room it is. And he sounds a little bit pissy, I think, in that moment.
Yeah.
He doesn't pull off what should be an acceptance. He should be like, obviously, the guest room. He's a bit like, ugh, really?
Yeah.
Still?
Mighty bitch.
Yeah. I mean, you're still pissed off? Fine.
It's interesting. It's done very economically, but it's like this marriage is not actually dead yet, which is important because, you know, as they start to sort of reconcile throughout the rest of the film, if it was completely dead, it would be such a huge arc that they'd have to go on and there might not be enough time. Now, with the comet, things start to build here. This is a section that I really liked, the sort of bureaucracy of a mass extinction event and also getting some people to safety. And John Garrity gets a phone call in the supermarket telling him, an automated message telling him he's been selected. And I love that because there's also a little bit of cognitive dissonance as well, because you've got Gerard Butler in a film and he gets a call from, is it like NSA or Homeland Security? And you can't help but think he's going to be like, hello, I'll fucking sort it. And I'll save everyone. It's so good that he's like, okay, yeah, like got the message, great, okay. And then just tries to sort it out, you know, tries to sort out his escape like a quote, but it's a normal person.
Do you think that, do you think that's a special alarm that's like the government has that goes to people's phones, like, because it's a really, I just hope it's not his ringtone, like that. It's the ugliest sound where it's like meh, meh, meh. And I for ages I was like, well, it could go to any kind of brand of phone, and therefore the tone has to be something that they know that brand can do, which they could never know. So they'll just use the tone that's on the existing phone that a person has, which means that is his fucking ringtone, which makes him a mental person. Because who would have that? Of all the ringtones you could have, when you just get a call, it's it makes me worried about Nathan's safety.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a quite stressful ringtone.
Are those government alerts a bit more normal in America, though, than they are over here? I guess we've all had texts from the government now over here because of to do with COVID, but over there I think it's a more frequent thing.
They've not texted me. What's your text say?
Are you not in the bunker?
No! I knew this would happen. Why have you two podcasters been selected ahead of me?
They're not letting anyone in who gets a rash when they get angry. It's me and Chris and a few people. We can maybe get you in. If you arrive just before they close the door, then they might just let you in.
They might assist me in, actually. No questions asked.
I'm used to getting messages on my phone, though. Can my TV talk to me like it does in this film? Frightened me.
Also, it's quite ineffective because Alison's in the shower. She's blow-drying her hair, so she doesn't hear it. And it's like, that's
bloody
not...
woman.
I know. And then the message disappears because she was doing her hair. And then, therefore, just might miss her slot.
She's all about a power play, though. I'm watching it. You know the bit where he's sort of about to start up the grill for the barbecue that they're having?
I knew this would piss you off. I knew this would piss you off.
I thought, please. I quite liked it. Because I was sort of like, she sort of goes up to him and goes, yo, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm doing the grill. And she's like, yeah, we need some wine. And he's like, really? Because I'm doing the grill. She's like, yeah, but you're going to go get some wine, aren't you? And he's like, fine. And so it goes off to get some wine. That is such a power play. But you understand why she's doing it, because she wants him to be out when the guests arrive so that when he comes back, the guests are already there because they all know about his infidelity at this point. Like, we don't, but they do. And so she comes back. He'll come back in having performed the task for her, like carrying the shopping, which lets all the guests know that he's sort of on his knees trying to win her back, which is why she does it at that point.
Oh, I don't. I think you're projecting.
I'm really not, because like she doesn't actually need the wine, and she sort of then, because if you look in the back of the shop, there's a row of wine bottles.
Oh, okay,
yeah, it's really, really well done.
Yeah, I just thought she wanted him to, because I inferred that maybe he hadn't been pulling his weight in terms of just like domestic stuff, and she's like, prove to me that you're serious about this relationship by going and getting me wine.
No, it's letting the guests know that he is having to work to win her back, so she like regains some face in front of them.
Well, good for you, Alison. Okay, good. Good, I like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's a big fan of Alison in this movie until she fucks everything up.
Before we get to that, though, I did ask Vicky, and we got an answer as to what she would, what one personal item she would pack, as he's told here. What would yours be, Alex? We've all been waiting.
This is about the quiz again. We did the quiz and everyone had a moan at me and I got deducted a point, which is bullshit. But nevertheless...
You can have that point added back on if you finally answer the question.
All right. I don't know. Simon, I'd probably take my dog. How's that? Yeah?
Actually, your dog healthy? Is your dog healthy?
He smokes, but they can't be... They can't not let me smoke him. Dogs in. He's a smoking dog. Yeah, he plays cards and smokes. There's a few paintings of him. You might have seen them.
Very funny. So actually, talking about the neighbours arriving and the friends. So I'm watching this film and I'm like, I get it. I like the little touches that sort of go against expectation for me because of who Gerard Butler is and the autumn, you know, the bureaucracy stuff. Get it. Now he gets the call again in front of his neighbours and it's a bit tense. And then I was like, I'm not sure I'm into this film because that needs to pay off. That's got to pay off. All they do is they're like, John, oh, I see you've got a call and why have you been selected and we haven't been selected? And I was like, pay this off. And it kind of doesn't. And then they leave and then it just turns around and just smash me in the face with pay off. And this script constantly was like, took me to one place where, you know what I'm like, and I'm shouting like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? And then the writer's like, because now we're going to do this and now I'm going to make you cry your eyes out. And this is where it started. So John and his family are leaving and their friend runs in front of the car and tries to make them take the little girl. Take her.
Yeah, fucking Deb wandering around the street with Ellie in her arms. Get out of the way, Deb. They're off to a bunker. Yeah, at least Deb wears her emotions on her arm. And Deb is in tears. First of all, where's Deb's husband in all of this? He's nowhere to be seen because he's embarrassed. He's embarrassed that she's making a scene on his little suburban street. You can tell when you meet him earlier. He's a prude like that. But Deb, it's like, we are fucked. We are all going to die. Little Ellie here, she's dead. She knows it. Bill, in his loud shirt, he's the moron because he sort of leans on the car window and goes, yeah, apparently it's an extinction level thing. So, you know, wherever you get, when you get where you're going, could you sort of give us a call? And Gerard Butler's like, if I survive, I will. And then Bill wanders back to his wife and actually says the line, he's going to call us. It's going to be fine. It's fucking not, Bill. What? You're an idiot.
Equally, I'd say that Gerard Butler has said, I'll call you when I know where to go to be safe. He finds out where to go to be safe. He doesn't call him, does he? He could have done that.
Gerard Butler is full of shit in this movie. He later on, he steals, let's call it what it is, he doesn't borrow, he steals someone's car, leaves them a note going, if I survive, I'll bring it back. Why not leave your number or your address or some credit card details, something so that it's not just about trust. Like, give them something to go on here. You're a dick for doing that.
I mean, the neighbour thing, I read that, which is why I loved it, as when, I know from my own experience, but also I think from human beings generally, when we're faced with crisis situations, we focus and fuss about little details as a way of coping. So, you know, and I think that's the neighbour's way of just saying, I'm going to be all right because I found this little detail. Oh no, John's going to ring. He's going to ring us. It's like, it doesn't make a difference to you if he rings you or not. You are so dead. But a human being's brain is like, can't deal with that. Obsess over a minor detail. I mean, I'm projecting massively, but I'm hugely like that.
He might have been saying it to pacify his wife because he was aware that she was about to freak out.
I think that's what it is. He's doing it to calm his family down and make them feel better.
Yeah, I think what's good, I'll move on from this scene because there's lots more I want to talk about. But what's good is I thought it was very realistic the way that Alison is immediately like, we should take her. And then, okay, no, we won't. And then it looks like they're going to change their mind and go back and all of that. Rather, you know, it's a temptation in a script to make everyone be quite clear about what they're going to do and align with their character. But people sort of flip-flop about what they're going to do quite a lot in this film. And I think that's realistic and I really appreciated it.
Yeah, Alison should not have done that because she's like, oh, should we take her? And it's like, why say that when, like, you know exactly the same information as Gerard Butler does, which is that she cannot get in. So saying that is giving false hope to Deb, who's wailing in the street. It was a silly thing to say.
She wants to take her because she's more compassionate.
Yeah,
but
can't,
she can't. But she still. Yeah, but she knows
she wants
that
to try.
She can't.
Though she wants to try, Alex.
But this is a fascinating thing, because when logic is logic, like there is no way, like it's as clear as it could be. Like she understands that there is no way they can get that little girl into the Air Force base. So her going, oh, but we should try, is a terrible thing to say out loud.
Well, that's the thing, because when John lays it out, if we do this, we will leave her at an airbase, and what is the point of that? And she'll be alone. And that, I was like, oh my God, like that would do it, because that's what makes it get through to his wife and made sense to me. It's like you'll abandon her when she needs her family.
Open your ears, Nathan, as well. Alone at an Air Force base. What must that be like? Pay attention, kid. Pay attention.
So then they're off to the Air Force base. And again, the script surprising. I'm like, why are the roads clear? Oh no, they're not, because everybody knows if there's like some sort of panic, everyone gets in their cars and tries to leave. And then we get to the airbase quite quickly, and the checkpoint and trying to get through that crowd, I found the stress of that all unreal, unbearable, of like they are special, they have been selected, and it's like you're just not going to get through this crowd, or this mob is going to turn on you, because of course it is. And then
it looked nearly as stressful as trying to go through US customs, didn't it?
I don't know.
my problem. Have you ever been to America, Victoria?
I have, but my memory of getting through customs is it was quite easy. No. Although I'll tell you what, the only hiccup is, at the time in my passport, I'd been to Russia and I had a big visa stamp thing in my passport, and they wanted to ask me loads of questions about that. And I was so bemused. I was like, I can't believe we're having this conversation. I'm not a spy from Russia, I think.
Yeah. I'm with Chris. It's a nightmare. And you've never like had to be so nice to someone you don't know who's actively being nasty to you. It's a very strange dynamic. Like they're really horrible to you. But if you sort of go, what are you doing? Why are you being such a dick? You're not coming into the country. It's a terrifying like 5 minutes you have to spend with the border force there.
The only time I could think of when I've had to be nice to someone who was actively being horrible to me was when I interviewed Kevin Spacey.
I was once working in America. I can't remember the it was like I was working for a UK TV company, but it was doing it in America, but I had the visa, but I didn't have a ticket out of there because it was the ticket was still at the film studio. Anyway, I ended up having to spend about 8 hours in the little office in American Customs being grilled about everything, which was just more boring than anything else.
Well, you've got nothing to hide, have you? You're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, silence. Right, so Nathan at this point has dropped his insulin. That is obviously very irritating. John
yes,
goes
leave the
back
kid.
To the
car. I'm yeah. sorry, leave the kid at this point. If he's dropped his insulin, it's his own bloody fault. I'm done. I would be done with that kid at that point.
You'd be done with your son at that point.
Yeah. Chris has a fair point. Like, maybe not entirely fair here, but there's a conversation to be had. Now, when they say your kid can't come in because he's diabetic, when Alison shoots her mouth off, it's like, oh, yeah, he's diabetic. And they're like, ooh, well, then he can't go. And she's like, oh, I didn't mean that. I meant, he's not diabetic. It's what I tell everyone, because I'm so proud of his not diabetes. But like, what is this rule about here?
I saw it more as a very cold-hearted, bureaucratic bottom line issue, in that they wanted to save as many people as they could, and so they weren't prepared to spend money on medicine, insulin, that they thought they when they don't have to, basically.
Are they saying, when they say it should have been flagged that the kid was ill at some point,
yes,
is that saying that your entire family would never have been asked to come in this bunker if we'd known your kid was ill?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So here's my problem. My problem is that if I had a sick kid, I'd still want the opportunity to decide.
you're a monster.
No, but this is why I think it's only fair to you still ask me, and then I go, I'm going to have to say no because of my kid, or more likely, fuck the kid. Where's the bunker?
My kid gets on really well with his granddad. His granddad wants to stay here.
His best mate Ellie can't get in either. He can stay with her.
Yeah, yeah. It's simple.
Unbelievable. It's a sickening, actually. No, not really. It's fine. I get it. I think maybe they just don't have the time to watch you make a decision, and they'll just go to another structural engineer. I think might be it.
As the only person here really qualified to answer this question, Victoria, what would you do? Would you?
Are you into being serious? Are you even asking me? Would I go,
Victoria? Victoria, what if they said that one of your kids couldn't come, but the rest could?
Oh yeah, that's good. That's
so
good.
Do you,
Chris,
want them,
yeah.
Would you want them all to die with you outside the bunker, or would you want to be inside the bunker with the ones that are allowed to live?
Two of them, and one has to stay outside.
But one of the brothers is missing. And how would I explain that to them? Do you think? Say, well, you know. He'd had a bad day with me.
So you'd rather
they'd
all die? What you're saying is you'd rather everyone dies?
I would rather we were all together. Yeah, as selfish as that sounds. I know.
You'd rob two of your sons of a future because of one. One of them, I had a gammy toenail and wasn't allowed in.
It is horrendous, actually. Of all the ways I've tortured myself with this film over the past week, that combination of events hadn't occurred to me.
Excellent. I'm glad.
Which is good, isn't
it?
Yeah. That makes me feel better about myself. I wasn't like, what if two of them could come but one wouldn't? I was like, we're either all in or we're all out.
What if Mark volunteered to stay with the one who wasn't allowed in and you were allowed in with the other two? At that point,
I'd do that.
Good. All right. That's what I needed. Apologies, Mark.
Because he's with his dad. He's all right. It's fine. Like, they're together. It's fine.
He's not. There's a comment.
Anyway, moving on from that horrible thought.
Can't wait till they're old enough to listen to this show. What a time capsule that is. What a time capsule this episode is for your grown-up kids. So which one is the one staying behind with Mark, Mum?
It's so awful. Because you probably can't hear, but I can hear them upstairs being so cute and so nice. And if they ever do listen to this when they're old enough to understand it, they'll be like, you can hear yourself. You were like on the radio or something. And it's me going, well, if Mark was with one of them, then I guess that'd be all right. I mean, not my first choice, but it's awful. Awful.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So here we are. This is something that I think is a little bit of an issue with this film. John is back, realizes his family have been excluded, and so not for the first time in this film, loads of people die because of him, or nearly die. And I couldn't believe he didn't feel bad about it. He's like, let me off, Alison. And then because of the delay, his plane blows up and loads of people get exploded, and it's all his fault.
No, I don't think so. I don't agree. I don't think that delay lasts long enough. And there's no other planes. There's no other planes taking off yet. No, I don't think it's down to him. I was concentrating. I'd thought that the first time and focusing the second time. I don't think he's responsible.
Okay,
but you see, I think that's the problem, though. The fact that you thought about it takes you out of the moment because you are like the film has done something wrong at that point. Because if you're even questioning whether it was or wasn't his fault, or there's a dispute here that it might have been, means that there's something wrong. Because
I don't think I thought it at the time. I think I read it in a review and thought they've got that wrong. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, yeah, I was right.
Yeah, well, Nettie said he killed everyone, and I said,
"Fair enough."
I said, "Fuck everyone! Like it's Gerard Butler. It doesn't matter as long as he lives."
So at this point, a post-it note saves the day, which I truly believe they will save the day. I love post-it notes. If you're casting around, just get your birthday ideas in very soon. Post-it notes. Fucking love a post-it.
I've got post-its all on my laptop right now from points to raise that we've skipped over in a new section I'm calling at the end of the show, Alex's footnotes, but we'll get to that.
So we've got we're propelled into the main journey, literal journey of our film, which is Alison's off to her dad's and the family they've got a rendezvous point, which I actually wanted to ask, do you have a rendezvous point in the case of like a big event like this where there's no phones, there's no whatever, like have you got a pre-agreement with friends and family about where to meet to be safe?
Yeah, the government sanctioned bunker that
Greenland. Mine's Greenland.
I'd probably go to, where would we go in the UK? I'd go to the Shetlands.
Yeah, but how would you get there? You can't drive because the roads are clogged. So how'd you get there?
Drone. I don't, a lot of drones.
You'd hop on top of a drone.
I'm confused by the question. So have you got one then, Vicky? I didn't know this was a thing. What's yours then?
Yeah. Me and my friend Lucy, who I think you've met, we're obsessed with this. Her dad owns a little patch of woodland somewhere in North Wales. I will not reveal the location because it's ours. And you can walk to it down the A6. So we just start walking and then eventually we get to the woods and that's where we're going because it will be safe. If a comet's going to hit the Earth and I've only got 2 days, I'll be in my garden drinking the cellar dry. If I've got more time, I'm going to Wales.
The one that sprung to mind for me was I'd see if Alex could get my name on the door at the Groucho and meet him there.
He won't.
He would.
He'd leave you outside. Sorry, Chris, we're full.
Actually, I might. Do you know what? I might. In that circumstance, in that very, very specific circumstance, if it was the end of the world, then yes, I would consider putting you down as my plus one.
Okay, that was good. That was fun. So then we get a very scary pharmacy.
Oh God, Chris, you've made everyone really reviewy. Now people are reviewing segments of the show. Why is Vicky now reviewing bits of the show during the show?
At this
was
point,
good. 5 stars. Yep,
5 stars.
I enjoyed it. Yep.
Alison and Nathan get a ride. And at this point, again, script does a good job of like withholding enough information just about, or just maybe personally for me, I didn't see this coming, but I then very coldly realised that these wristbands are going to be a problem.
Yeah, you say that, but I think that right from the word go, they've somehow made you feel suspicious of everyone in this film. From the moment he's in the supermarket and gets the message, and there's the woman's looking at him while he's looking at the message, I was just and then he gets back to the house and all the neighbours are questioning him. I was on edge, feeling like everyone was a potential villain in this film. So as soon as she got in that car, I was just trying to figure out what the angle was that this couple were gonna what number they were gonna do on them.
You kind of touched on this at the start, Victoria, which is like this idea that some people, like everyone, is either really good or really, really not nice whatsoever. Apart from the people who are just watching it on the rooftop, having a drink and a bit, like they're great, they're just like chilling. But like the army officer at the Air Force Base, who's the one who refuses to let Nathan on, she makes this point of going, everyone here is a volunteer. My family weren't selected. All of the armed forces you see here are just volunteering. This, for me, is where the film starts to sort of like become like the opposite of what it's purporting to be, which is a kind of realistic comic movie. A kind of, this is how it might really be. Do you think, and it's a question, not an opinion, do you really think that people would volunteer? For the last 48 hours on Earth, they would go, I'm going to go to the Air Force Base and make sure these people who've been selected for a bunker get on the plane, rather than spend the last 48 hours of my existence with my loved ones.
No, I don't. I don't believe that. Not in a million years.
I had a real problem with this, because I was like, well, maybe I'm the cynic here. And actually, maybe, you know, God-fearing Americans, you know, there's the religious thing out there. Maybe God-fearing Americans would go, if I'm going to heaven, I have to do my duty here and volunteer at this Air Force Base.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I bought it because I was like, I don't know. You know, if you signed up for the armed forces, then it's a very serious commitment. And I'm sure that those people in this film, these volunteers, had it drilled into them that, you're saving humanity, and it's a very it's the most honourable thing you can do. And all of your training and all of your experience is nothing compared to this. Like, this is the thing. And maybe that might get a few people, but I think there'd be quite a high turnover as people are like, right, I've done a few hours and now I am going home, actually.
Well, exactly. And the problem is it doesn't get any worse. Like, that bit at the start with the volunteers at that Air Force Base, okay, let's take that as read. Then when Allison finds Nathan later on at the second Air Force Base, where he's in the tent on his own, and that doctor comes in and is like, hey, how are you doing? He's been a real champ. Do you want a hug? And there was 48 hours before. There's now 23 hours till the end of the world, and it actually seems even more relaxed at this base. What are you doing here? Why are you here? This doctor is like, yeah, I mean, I don't really like my parents or my kids, so I thought I'd just spend my last hours here hugging strangers. Come here, champ.
It just keeps you on edge, though, like Chris says. Like, people are either every time someone walks into the scene, you're like, are they going to kill, you know, John or Allison or Nathan, or are they going to rescue them? But there is no shades of, I mean, I haven't, that's unfair, actually. There's sort of shades of grey in the way that the military woman reverses her decision or appears to, and then is like, actually, there's nothing we can do.
I think with this couple in the car, I think it's quite clever, because initially Hope Davis, she's initially doing a good deed. She's not planning to do anything bad. Yeah. And then when the husband starts turning, she does try and stop him.
He turns on her as well because she's
absolutely you quickly see that she's absolutely terrified of him.
Yeah, it's really good scene. Really good.
So because I think you've got the shades of grey there. Yeah, exactly.
He's screaming at her and he's a big man. And the thing is, in any other film, you'd be like, shit, Hope Davis drives off, because she can drive off. Like, he's left the keys, I think. But that's her husband. And he's just, the way he's yelling at her, it would be like a reflex. Like, you wouldn't be able to help it. You would just do what he says, because it's terrifying.
I've never seen him in anything but The American Office, in which he's really good in that, because it's weird. I wonder if they saw it. I'm binging it at the moment, but I watched an episode where he finds out that his girlfriend kissed someone else behind his back. This is in a sitcom, and he proper loses his shit. It's the most terrifying scene in The American Office. He's in a bar, and she tells him, and you think he's going to go, don't worry about that. And he hurls a fucking pint glass at the wall, and it shatters. And you're like, that's the guy who's going to be in Greenland in the future as a psychopath.
It's the most chilling scene when you realise that he's called Ralph, I think, is going to stop the car He tries to reason with them a bit, but he's, basically the plan then is to kick Allison out of the car, steal her wristband, and use Nathan as the sort of ruse to get them inside the airbase. And the reason, it's very, very, very powerful and really upsetting, because it plays on purpose, I'd say, exploits your absolute darkest fears, that when push comes to shove, you actually can't protect your child in the way that you thought you could and the way you told them you would, because this dude is bigger than you and that's the end of that. Like, it's just the most basic human primal thing that if someone is stronger than you, they will take your things, basically. And well, it doesn't matter what, like...
Yeah, it's true. It's something we don't have to address ever, because, you know, you forget that that's how, really, once society breaks down, that's how it works. But we're also accustomed to society protecting us from ever needing to think those things, that when it comes to it, it's just shock, if nothing else. Yeah. Shock that actually this is happening and I cannot do anything.
Can't do anything about it. And that's why it's something, it's a really hard scene to watch, because you do lie to, you know, you tell yourself those lies all the time that, well, if this happened, I'd do, because you have to protect yourself mentally from those dark thoughts. But we all know that there isn't, you can't do that. You have to be stronger than that person, physically stronger than that person. And if you're not, that's it. It's just so awful. Oh, so anyway, light. John's in a van fight.
I wrote down, nearly gets a hammer in the head for being Scottish.
I like that. I thought it was. I like the fact that they're like, "Oh, this is my accent, so leave me alone," kind of thing. Again, not technically his fault, but lots of people die because he's there, including his friend who told him about Greenland for no reason. He's just like, I like your face, you're a structural engineer, you say, here is the clue to salvation.
I don't know, I think people would do that. I honestly think when you've got a bit of information, you know, when you, like, you find out, it happens a lot. I don't know whether you guys get this, it happens a lot when a celebrity dies, and like, do you have people in your phone who always feel like they want to be the first to tell you that someone famous is dead? I always get a text from the same person going, oh, so-and-so's died. Like, it's almost like, and you're like, okay, cool. It's like you want to be the person to pass on this big bit of news. And I think it's the same thing going on with this guy. He's like, he knows something and he kind of wants to go, I know something. Guess what?
Yeah, I don't know, because space would be at a premium, like, even just on the, and it is, we find out later, like, it's going to be a bit of a squeeze. So you think that he wouldn't want to have any extra people on that plane or in that bunker. It's, I don't know. It works also, because... Go on,
Vicky.
No, it's fine. I'm just rambling.
but Gerard Butler does kill someone by sticking a hammer in their head. Yeah. And I feel like maybe this is the first time we've ever seen one of his characters actually regret killing someone on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's just a very different Gerard Butler. You feed it up to this point, and then when he kills that person and then you see how it affects him, it's just, I really enjoyed what a different approach this was for him.
Well, Mike Banning. Mike Banning's death of choice is stabbing people in the head. So
he
loves it. He loves it right in the head. So he sort of uses Mike Banning's methodology, but then can't deal with it afterwards. Poor old John.
Poor old John. So Nathan and Elliot are reunited, like you say, with some extraordinary kindness from some volunteers. But really, if it wasn't for the feelings that were being exploited by the writer and director in that scene, it's just a woman looking through tents and it shouldn't be as good as it is, just going, Nathan.
Well, she sells it, like, doesn't she? She sells the shit out of it. And it's also coming straight after you've seen that psycho asshole get his comeuppance. It's such a satisfying moment when Nathan says, they're not my parents. They took me from my mum. Because you're willing him to say something and you're desperate for these people to get their comeuppance. And when he finally does it, it's so satisfying.
Yeah. But it's such a powerful moment, because I think it's so fundamentally relatable. This idea that he is a child, that is an adult who's told him not to do something, not to admit that they're not his parents. And you can see, he plays it so well, the kid, as he's sort of building up that confidence to disobey a terrifying adult who's holding him in the hope this other strange adult who he doesn't know will rescue him from this situation. And as he builds his confidence to say it, you are just like, it's one of the best scenes in the film.
Yeah. Oh, it's making me sad thinking about it. That poor child. Oh, So, right. So now we're on like a bit of the like the last stretch. So they're going to have one last push to try to get to Greenland. So they go and see Grandad. But Grandad isn't coming because his wife passed away a few years ago. He's right where he wants to be, kind of thing. And I did get that. Like, I felt a bit annoyed with John at this point that it's such a long shot that you're going to get in. You're wasting your last hours on Earth on a road trip, on a stressful road trip that might not pay off. And I would be with Grandad. I'd be like, we gave it a shot. It isn't going to happen. Let's just enjoy what we've got left. I wouldn't waste my time getting stuck in traffic.
But that's movie logic, isn't it? I get that. I think the problem is that even within the logic of the movie that we need him to go and try and get into Greenland, it's just a bit sloppy, this bit where he literally says to his wife, he's like, if we're going to go do this, we've got to go now. By which I mean, I'm going to go have a man-to-man with your granddad in the barn. Just talk some shit through. So I'll see you in about 10.
It's like, and also then hide under a bridge for a few hours, but still think they're on track. The timings don't meet up, like, match up.
What do you think about the fact, I couldn't believe this bit. So that, like, Alison had her child stolen from her, and Gerard Butler lost both his wife and his child for huge portions of this film. They have just been reunited with him. And yet when that little bit of comet hits and they're at Dad's house, they're both in the barn with Granddad. And when the comet hits, they're like, fucking hell, we better go see if Nathan's... You've left your kid alone again. Literally after just getting him back. You fucking terrible parents. Terrible.
Yeah, it's a bit good cocky, point. Isn't it?
That's a good point. Yeah. Another thing I enjoyed about these scenes is this is the second time in a week after Paul Hogan we've looked at a man who's purely made of wire and leather.
Yeah.
Scott Glenn looks incredible.
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good granddad. A little bit of sort of relationship stuff. They're in the car. Alison tells John that John shagging someone else was basically her fault, which is super handy.
Unbelievable.
I know. I was really angry about that.
I thought you might be.
I was really mad. I mean, I know it's never as black and white as all that, and I'm not saying, but she does still, we've not seen her be overtly angry. She's been simmering about it. She's a bit passive aggressive with the wine and all of that. But she should have her moment where she was like, I know we were having problems, but I didn't think you were going to do that, rather than being like, I pushed you into that, or whatever she says. And then he gets to be the big man to say, it's not your fault.
Yeah, because like the minute he sort of senses her softening is when he finally goes, oh, so you're about to forgive me. Now's the time I'm going to take responsibility for my actions. Now that you're already on the forgiveness train, he's like, oh, yeah, no, I crossed a line. You know, I crossed a line, walked through a door, got under a duvet. I shouldn't have. It's like, oh, Jesus.
That doesn't make it sound like fun at all. I got under a duvet I shouldn't have. Oh, dear.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. The bit where she's like, you sleeping with another woman, that was my fault. I made you sleep with another woman. Ladies and gentlemen, the last sparks of realism just left Greenland.
Stuff starts falling from the sky. John, the scene is they hide under a bridge because there's a lot of fire falling from the sky. He atones for killing someone because he saves someone that he doesn't have to save, really, and it's very dangerous to save. And that's just to cancel out the fact that he's a murderer. Which is fine. Probably didn't need that. I quite like the idea that he's going to live his last few hours on Earth, or if he survives the rest of his hours, as a murderer, because the moral sort of quandary it throws up, like, you did what you had to do, but now you've got to live with that. Quite like that.
Absolutely. I think you can excise this scene.
Yeah.
Are we talking about the pilot scene?
No.
Let's get on to that. So they go
when
to Canada.
When he saves a man from a burning car, Alex, we both got rid of it. It's gone. It's gone.
Yeah. Great.
So they go to Canada and they find the airport really easily. They find Canada really easily. And then they're in Canada for 30 seconds. They're like, oh, look, there's the exact airport that we need to go to. That's so handy. And even though it's actual suicide, Big John, he's like, what do you weigh, son? And he lies about his weight. Big John is allowed on, which will basically kill the pilots, which it does, because the plane crashes. And we can only assume that the extra weight of John and his family sort of drives the plane into that cliff face. And then John goes to help them. And if I was that pilot, I'd be like, I told you this would happen.
He can't speak. His guts are out.
You know me. Yeah. I'd find something in the tank to be like, I fucking told you this would happen.
So two things. First of all, you're absolutely right. When they arrive at that airport, just to break that scene down where the pilot gets out of the plane and they get out of the truck and they have a conversation, the pilot basically goes, there is no way I can take you on this plane. Get on the plane. That's that scene. That is bad. It's an insane scene. And then I just think it's such a cop-out when the pilot dies, because the pilot has let Gerard Butler on the plane with his family. Gerard Butler goes into the cockpit and the pilot's like injured. There, surely you have Gerard Butler having to make the decision to get to the bunker with his family and leave this guy to die there, even though he's not dead. Don't have him die in the scene. Have him like Gerard Butler trying to help him, but unable to free him. And then having to leave him there to die when the comet hits, even though he saved him and his family. It's just such an easy out for him in that scene where he goes, oh, I can't really get you out of the seat. Oh, you're dead. Doesn't matter anyway.
I tried. Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. And they're allowed into the shelter, absolutely no problem. So even though this shelter has probably been quite finely budgeted, I assumed, because of the insulin challenge, and that numbers would be tight and all the rest of it, and one extra body, you know, can cause so many complications in terms of the supply chain of food and whatever else. The military they're not even like, how did you get here? They're like, come in.
I feel like here, though, they're not as bothered about the numbers because the planes haven't made it, because they've all blown up.
John's had the all runway. The planes blown up. Yeah.
So they're actually desperate to get people into these shelters because they're about to close them and they're empty.
Otherwise, it's a huge waste of money. Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, though, if I thought it could just be me and my mates that I work with and all the other humans hadn't come, I'd be like, should we just shut the doors? It could be just us and then we'll have this huge bunker all to ourselves, because look at the wine. Great. Oh, sorry guys, yeah, we didn't realise you were coming. Yeah, because you're so late.
What, do you think there's a room of wine next to the room of insulin?
They'll have a
bucket of Graham Norton's Prosecco.
Don't drink it, it's rough.
I'm surprised that Alison wasn't running into the bunker past all the military going, my child has diabetes type 1. He's very ill. Can we go in still? Are we allowed? He's sick. Sick as a dog, I tell you.
A bit of a traumatic scene, which is very cheesy, but by this point I've bought it, so it kind of doesn't matter, where Nathan, the super smart kid, as soft as I am about kids, when he says to his mum and dad, my friend told me that before you die, you get flashes. I was like, shut up, Nathan. It's inappropriate for a start. Your parents are concentrating on getting you to safety. Just fucking play on the iPad and keep your mouth shut, yeah?
Mummy and daddy are talking about daddy having sex with someone else, so shut your fucking mouth.
Yeah, right in front of you, Nathan. But then when he's like, where are the flashes? I had to stop. I was like, stop. Enough. Like, this is too much. This is too much for me. Just a mess. A mess, mess, mess.
You're talking about the flashes that you... Because he does the bit in the car. He's like, you see flashes before you die. Yeah, okay, yeah. And at the end, when they're on the bunk beds and he's like, where are the flashes?
Where are the flashes? Because your child is saying, I know I'm going to die and I've been lied to. Where is this thing? Oh, my God. That's so dark.
But then they've discussed that he said that he'd rather that you get the flashes when you were living so you could enjoy them. Yeah. And so they all agree that would be a nice thing. And then the flashes happen when they're down there.
Yeah.
And so I really would like this film more if it ended there with that ambiguity.
Yep.
Are they seeing these flashes because they're dying or because they're going to live? They've set it up.
Yeah.
Just fade to black.
I was fully expecting it. When it faded up, I was like, you're joking. Anything can happen now, because that is what the film has been telling me is going to happen all along. They're going to die. It's not going to work, but they've had a journey. And the point of the film is these three people have come together. Their wounds have healed and they can die together as a family that love each other. Beautiful, whatever, the end. And instead, this like storm door is rising up. And I was like, to me at this point, there could literally be aliens on the other side. Like, you passed the test. Like, it made no sense to me that we would have a happy ending.
You need some CGI birds to look really fake. The final effect in a movie full of effects needs to be some terrible CGI swallows or swifts, I think, pissing about outside the door.
And also, it's been a really self-contained story. To now show us devastation all around the globe, you know, before we'd seen some images on the telly, on the news, which felt natural. But then to do that now, it just felt completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
Especially because it's the bloody Eiffel Tower again. It's like, I just can't see the Eiffel Tower bent like and disfigured again.
Yeah, but Alex,
in a disaster movie.
If they'd used Croydon, it wouldn't have looked any different.
Oh, he can say that because he's from there. He
can say
he's
from there. I'm from there.
Yeah, he's from there.
I'm allowed to.
Yeah.
I'm allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's all I have. I felt, yeah, I agree with you. They were like, oh, hey, Moscow calling. It's like, we don't care about Moscow because we're not in that story. And I just didn't care. And that's it. That's all I have. Anything else?
Nope.
Nah.
Nah. Okay, great. Let's do our bits. The bits. What was your best scene, Chris?
Easy. When the couple take the kid. My jaw was completely on the floor. I couldn't believe what I was watching, and I thought it was just a brilliant movie moment.
Mm. Alex?
It's kind of specific to me, but there's a bit just before they go in the bunker and they see the full size, the 9-mile-wide planet killer overhead, sort of like heading for Europe. And it sort of fills the sky. Even though it's over at Greenland at that point, it's still so big because it's such a big asteroid. It's heading for Europe and it's going to decimate Europe. And I, as a kid, growing up in the 80s, I used to read, I read Raymond Briggs's When the Wind Blows, and it fucked me up. And I, for years as a child, I was terrified of seeing a mushroom cloud on the horizon and knowing I had about 3 seconds before I was incinerated because of the specter of nuclear war and a bomb landing, and knowing that you were just going to die having seen this mushroom cloud. And it brought back terrifying memories of that. And so that bit with the comet overhead, it just really freaked me out. That bit.
I'm the same as Chris, the kidnap, and then just buttoned by when Ali is reunited with Nathan. Ooh, I can't even say this. And all she says is sorry. And she doesn't even say, I'm so glad I found you or anything crap like that. She's apologizing to him because she let it happen. I mean, she feels like she let it happen. She did in that weird way. She will always think that she's responsible for that, even though two people kidnapped her child off her.
So much credit to that actress as well for selling it when the kid goes, when she's on her own on the highway, and then when she's reunited with him. It's absolutely brilliant acting.
It's chilling. It is. Your most valuable whatever, Alex.
Clark. We've not really talked about Clark very much. The actual interstellar comet, and I wondered whether Chris Spaulding was influenced or inspired in some way, because they keep going on about this being an interstellar visitor. Do you guys know about Omanuma? In 2017, I think, when he was writing this. So I'm not saying he was influenced by this, but the first ever interstellar object, an object from outside our solar system, entered our solar system. This kind of cigar-shaped object called Omanuma. And what's kind of really interesting about this and why it's being talked about in the press at the moment is when it arrived near the sun, it moved in a way that no astrophysicist can explain.
Whoa, is that true?
Yeah, as though it was powered by a sort of...
Something
else. So there's a Harvard professor is sort of at loggerheads with a lot of the astrophysicist community at the moment because they won't acknowledge that there is a real possibility this could be something that was engineered, built by an alien civilization. And he's arguing that it's a solar sail, that it's not active, it's defunct now, but it's floating through space from an alien civilization. And it's a solar sail that was powered by the sun as it neared the sun because it moved in a way no natural object should have moved.
So it's a solar sail that's like broken off something or that's been sent.
Either a solar sail that's broken off something or it's a solar sail that is on a ship of some kind, which is the actual cigar-shaped object itself is a ship with a solar sail on it.
Just need to write this down. I've just got an idea called Iceland. I'm just going to make a note.
But it's really, it's so fascinating, this thing. Like, alone, that if it was just the information that for the first time in history, an object from another solar system entered our solar system, but the fact that it then moved in a way that is inexplicable to the astrophysicist community is insane. Anyway, so that's Omanuma. You should look it up. It's really interesting. But I loved Clark because I don't know whether it's because I'd read about Omanuma, but I found the comet very, very spooky. Like the way it was put in the sky in the background of certain shots, just like it's sort of like all these little bits, like, and the tails and the lights. So I guess my MVW is the effects team responsible for creating a really unique way of seeing a comet on film that gave me, it was eerie, gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Mm, beautiful. Chris?
I mentioned this on Monday, but I'll say it again. I'm a big Gerard Butler fan. I think he's a real swashbuckler.
Terrific, terrific, give it a rest.
Terrific actor. But what I was going to say is maybe we've been wrong about Gerard Butler this whole time. Maybe he isn't the tough guy Hollywood wants him to be. Maybe the best Butler is an exposed, vulnerable Butler, because he really felt like a character I cared about and wanted to succeed in this film. And it was a very different to the one we're used to seeing. So I'm going to give it to him. I think he really delivers in this movie.
Wow. You should have a look at the alternate ending. It's on YouTube, where he punches the asteroid back into space. It was the one he wanted, but they wouldn't go for him.
nearly spot one of my changes there, but we'll get to that.
Mine is the writer, Chris Sparling. Just because the script really surprised me. And again, because my expectations had been set perfectly tuned, it seemed, for to have the best possible experience with this film. But I was ready for it not to be as smart as it was with certain just manoeuvres. So the insulin thing is a really good example of that, because John and Ali are like, shit, we haven't got the insulin. And I'm like, oh my God, it's a military facility. They're going to have tons of insulin. They're not going to let someone go into shock because they haven't got any insulin. Go and ask for some insulin. So she basically does, and they're like, get out. And I love that because it shuts me up, which is always a treat. And I think basically, I don't think act 3 is great. I don't like the ending. But a lot of work in the first two acts meant that I just bought it, all of it, in act 3, because the work had been done by that point by the writing.
In terms of his script, though, Vicky, I feel like that if it's 53 minutes in, we find out that Greenland is the destination.
Yeah.
And it feels like that's like a twist or like an important piece of information. Was the film not called Greenland before? Because this doesn't feel like important information when that's the title of the movie.
That's a really good point. I don't know. I feel like I read that it wasn't, but I can't remember. Mm.
It just felt like the title was a spoiler for something that they kind of keep from you for half the film.
And also, isn't that satisfying? You're just like, oh, Greenland. Oh, okay. It could be that. Anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a good point. What would you change, Chris?
Well, Gerard Butler should definitely kick a family blocking his way out of the shelter in slow motion while shouting, this is Greenland. That's that goes without saying, doesn't it?
Do it properly. Do it properly.
When he visited me in my office when I worked at IGN, we got him, which is embarrassing to ask him to do This Is Sparta, but he absolutely went for it. We recorded him and put it online, and it went, God, I think it went to number one on Reddit, him shouting that in our office. So I'm not going to do it. That's him. That's his thing. You could do it, Alex.
No, I'm not doing No, I did that on last week's show.
Yeah, you did the clue. No. Yeah. I also think it's weird that they don't carry out their dead diabetic son at the end, because they definitely didn't have a year's supply of insulin in that shelter.
Oh my God, that's such a good point.
9 months. Oh, it was God. 9 months they were in there, and they did not have 9 months worth.
Oh my God, that's so... Oh no,
he's gone.
That's
ruined. He's dead. Nathan's dead. I'm sorry, guys.
Because the whole thing, my thing is, like, it was a budget. They haven't got the money for a medicine that they consider to be, you know, in a cold way, unnecessary. So there's no insulin.
Nathan's dead.
Oh my God.
Sorry.
Oh man. Oh, that's rough. Okay, good. Alex?
Chris took mine earlier, so sort of silently seething. But it's exactly as you both said. It's the bit where it should end on the flashes with the ambiguity of whether they die or not. And like, it would be so clever as well, because you'd have had the kid going, it happens before you die, and then reversing it to it happens when you when you're still alive. So you're like, you've actually set this up.
I think that was the ending. I honestly do. And whether they were able to do test screenings during lockdown, I'm sure they were able to show it to people. I feel like people say, no, we need more.
Something
I reckon
light.
They had two endings shot. I really do.
I feel like that as well. My change is either give Ali more than one child to look after. It's always one child in films, and I totally get that. But the reality of trying to save yourself and save your family whilst breaking up fights between children is something I would like to see, because you don't see that very often. But my real change is when they arrive in Greenland, they seem to think it's going to be a piece of piss to get in the shelter, but they shouldn't. And they should be very grizzled by what they've gone through. They should have seen the worst of people, like building up, but just the worst of people. No one has helped them. And they're so jaded by what they've gone through that as the audience, you think, well, even if you survive, you are damaged forever. And the last humans will be scared people in a broken, fractured society. So what is the point? And then they get there and basically it is as it is. And the military is really helpful and lovely, showing that when things get really tough, our instinct actually at the very last minute is to help each other. But that comes as a surprise to the audience. So it would feel redemptive. It would feel hopeful to build to like the slingshot of that niceness at the last minute. It's random otherwise. People are nice and horrible in sort of random patterns, which is more realistic. But by the time you get to Greenland, it's less. It packs less of a punch that the military let them in because you don't really know what's going to happen. Get it?
Yep.
Yeah,
I'll go. I get it.
Very good.
I get it, but I do think that should become a catchphrase after you make a change. You should always go, get it? Do you get it?
Did you understand what I just said?
It's just because you always got so quiet. And that's not even because we can't see each other. When we can see each other, you just always look a bit embarrassed by me. Oh, it makes me feel... Yeah, sorry. I feel very insecure today. So.
Get it? Right. That is us done with Greenland then. All right. Well, it is time now. Geostorm versus Greenland for the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Right.
Alex, you've made people wait 4 days for this, your Geostorm theory. So are you going to kick this off today?
Yeah, I think I will. I think I'll kick it off today. Thank you, Chris. So here's my thinking. I actually think a vote for Greenland today would be a mistake. I think it would be a backward step in terms of which film you pick. Because I personally think we've all seen the kind of film that Greenland is a million times, and it is literally steeped in conservative ideals and tired movie tropes. Mm-hmm. A man with a wife and family and a sparky but sickly child, the parents having problems because specifically of the man's infidelity, but those problems paling in comparison to the bigger problem, the wife standing by him and certainly having not done any infidelity herself, and then eventually forgiving the man because he can look after his family and taking some of the blame for his infidelity herself. The man earning forgiveness from the wife's father through a man-to-man chat in a fucking barn surrounded by tools like men. It's well made technically, but that's it. Next to Greenland, Geostorm is positively subversive. Central romance is between two estranged brothers, not a man and wife, and not even the man and his kid and his estranged wife. The only other relationship is between a Weasley office guy with a terrible haircut and his kick-ass, hard-as-nails girlfriend. He's the one flapping about at the end, terrified as she spins a car 180 degrees and blows the shit out of some bad guys. And you've got Andy Garcia as the first Cuban-American president of the USA ever in cinema. Greenland is also a movie unconcerned with the rest of the world, other than obliterating Europe at the end. It's isolationism in a movie form. Geostorm actually crams in an anti-isolationist message into the script. Geostorm, technically, might be a badly made film, but below the surface, it is the more groundbreaking, forward-thinking, politically sound of the two, and its heart is in a much better place. Greenland would have you believe it's realistic, but the way a lot of people behave in the last days of planet Earth is simple fantasy. At least Geostorm wears its ridiculousness on its sleeve. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm voting for Geostorm.
You're not. Ooh. No, I thought I thought that's it. You're joking.
Alex, take a bow. What an effort. Honestly, effort. Highgate's local MP will be shitting themselves, whatever that is.
You very much picked and chosen your facts from these two storylines, I think, here to fit a narrative.
The facts are the facts, though. First Cuban-American president ever in the history of cinema. Andy Garcia, incredible, incredible scenes. Greenland. It's a Republican's wet dream.
I applaud the effort. I really do. I think that's amazing.
I'm not going to lie. It took a lot, but I'll be damned if we're just gonna bash Geostorm without at least accepting there are some things that are a little more forward thinking in that bloody movie than in Greenland.
So Greenland's 1-2-1.
I knew that was gonna happen. Yeah. Cool.
Do you wanna give your reasons, Vicky?
I didn't even write anything. Word.
You'd have to have books in your head to pick Geostorm, that's why. So
it's one of the worst things I've ever seen in my entire life, and I'm glad I've seen it because it's good to have seen it and to be able to talk about it. But when I was watching it, I was like driving my fists into my eyes, like I hate this. Apart from when Abbie Cornish drives that car in reverse, which is wicked.
Well, and doesn't at any point blame herself for her husband's infidelity. So you're voting for the movie that does that. So okay, interesting, Victoria.
I'm going to try and actually take this seriously, but so when I'm doing this verdict, this reminds me of when we did the giant asteroid movies, because I think it's fundamentally the same difference here with Geostorm. Like Armageddon, I'm never emotionally invested, and so I really don't care about characters living or dying. Whereas with Greenland, like Deep Impact, I care about these characters and their plight, and that makes all the difference. And that combined with the fact that Geostorm is shit is why I'm going for Greenland.
Fucking hell. Geostorm, you don't even realise what you're talking about. Geostorm is so meta. Like, Geostorm is about a geostorm. Loads of little storms.
You never see a geostorm in it.
They all combine. But the theory behind a geostorm is little storms that all combine into one giant fucking disaster of a storm.
Which we never see. They never even show it.
Okay, but think about this. Geostorm, the movie, is a selection of disasters in every different separate department of the film. Wardrobe, casting, like lighting, directing, editing. And it's all come together to make one fucking disaster of a movie. How meta is Geostorm? It's incredible.
Jared Butler's getting it. All right. That's it. We're done.
Yeah. He looks good on a spaceship, but he'd look better just on a ship.
On a ship with a big beard and a wooden leg.
You got to hope he doesn't actually ever get cast in it, Chris, hypothetically, because if he does, he goes, hey, I might just find out a bit about this Chris Tilley who's written it. I did a podcast on Geostorm. Oh, let me have a wee listen to it. Oh, my fuck. Get me out of this fucking contract.
I think you'll find I've been very positive about Gerard Butler's performances across 3 hours worth of podcasting this week.
So that was a win for Geostorm. Let's move on. What is the clue for next week? Whose choices are they, by the way? It's Chris's. Chris's. What are you giving us? You've given us a clue. What was it?
Yeah, it took me 2 days to come up with it. Can you not remember it?
Yeah, I can. It was Dancing in the Moonlight.
No, it was Blame It on the Boogie.
Three words. Good.
So, Alex.
Five words. Five words.
Alex, on Monday, you'll be kicking off your Sunday shoes to do 1984's Footloose.
Amazing.
Which is currently playing on Sky. And Vicky, you'll be having the time of your life on Thursday, thanks to 1987's Dirty Dancing.
Yeah!
Which hits Netflix sometime in March. In the UK, they just didn't tell me the date when I DM'd them because everyone always ignores me. but both of these films are also available to rent on Amazon as well.
What you want to do is you want to start playing Amazon and Netflix off each other in these emails, because, Amazon wouldn't give you unbelievably, Amazon wouldn't give you an advanced copy of Coming to America. And now Netflix
is sponsoring it. I'm now hearing it isn't that bad. I'm now hearing it isn't that bad. So
I was killing myself laughing the other day, remembering you being like, so I asked them and they wouldn't give it to me, the amateurs. It was just creasing me up, just that you would have been so outraged and be like, that is on you.
And you're hearing it's not that bad. Is it out yet? I thought, is it out already?
It will have come out by the time this goes live, this podcast, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I'm just sort of now I'm flashing back to the episode and going, but if we stitched ourselves up by going, it's not, I think I did. I think I said I saw the trailer and I didn't think it looked good. That's interesting that it's good. I'm very pleased for it. Right, that's us done for this week. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please do follow us on Twitter at ClashPod, on Instagram at ClashPod. We are back next week doing dancing films. Yes, I'll be here. on Monday talking about Footloose. I'm excited. Bye-bye until Monday. Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.